Good morning. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I'm Rick Recking, a member of the program committee. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every color and ethnic group and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender, or family structure. We welcome you no matter what your age or your abilities or inabilities. On Sunday mornings, we provide a wide variety of services. Some are presented by a Prairie member or friend, a member of the wider community, or by our Reverend Sandra Ingham. Today, Ken Haydock will be speaking about the right of conscience and the democratic process. Opening words, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. The chalice lighting today will be done by Joanna Hatch and Evan Creed and family.
Flame of fire, spark of the universe, that warmed our ancestral hearth, agent of life and death, symbol of truth and freedom, we strive to understand ourselves and our earthly home.
The program committee this year has endeavored to bring a series of programs on the UUA's purposes and principles. We haven't done them in a particular order, but tried to organize them according to the season, the spirit of the season. And this one is the right of conscience and the democratic process, for obvious reasons. We're doing it around July 4th. Ken Haydock is a longtime friend of Prairie. He's presented programs in the past on a religious nature, on Buddhism, as I recall, and always been well received. Ken, welcome, and Ken Haydock.
Let me start with a few prefatory remarks before we get into the substance. The first is that my object here is to kind of put a, you know those old egg beaters, the handheld ones that you needed to crank? It's to put a little egg beater in everybody's mind. This is, if it were written, it would be considered a think piece. So please accept it in that vein. Second, I've got a couple of apologies. Fellow humanists, some of the text has references to God. Feminists. When Thomas Jefferson and Robert Burns were alive in the 1700s, in context, the terms man and men could refer to all human beings, not just those of us with Y chromosomes. And I apologize for any confusion there. Tomorrow is July 4th. It's the day that the United States observes its independence. Today isn't. And so let's, instead of having a July 4th oration, let's something a little bit more analytical, introspective. Now, the topic is the fifth principle. There were seven principles that were set down by the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations in America in, I think, the 1960s, with maybe a few tweaks since then. And the fifth reminds me a little bit of the First Amendment to the Constitution. First Amendment to the Constitution isn't on one topic: freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of the press, so forth. Nor is this. I don't think it addresses one issue. It talks about conscience, and it talks about democracy. And I see these as compatible but separate topics. So first, I'd like to talk a little bit about conscience, and then move on to the subject of democracy. Now, these are personal reflections. I think conscience starts with accepting some set of standards or principles that are ethical or moral. For a lot of people, once you do that, end of game. You're there. But I think conscience actually exists across more of a continuum. There are people who have accepted certain principles, moving up the chain. There are people who have accepted them, don't live up to them, and feel guilty. That's a step forward. There are people, probably most of us, who try to live up to what we consider standards of right and wrong and when you should act or should not, don't always make it. And there are also people who make an attempt to center their moral precepts in the middle of their lives and work from there. You might think in terms of members of holy orders and Christian traditions, Buddhist monks, nuns, and even the more committed members of the Religious Society of Friends. It said of the Friends that they did not abolish the clergy, they abolished the laity. Everyone's responsible, okay? And probably the clearest example of this is there are, in our society today, and the fifth principle, which is right there on the wall off to your right in the blue plaque toward the back, it does talk about introducing concept of democracy into society in general. The question of conscience, then, it's related to consciousness. It's consciousness of guilt or consciousness of right and wrong. Okay, and in the context of our society, there are folks like the evangelical Protestants in America in the last century who believe that what's important in terms of right and wrong is your views with respect to Jesus of Nazareth. Full stop. Once you have that, you're off to salvation. The other end of the continuum is an odd collection of groups, Roman Catholics, Unitarian Universalists, Quakers, many Buddhists, who, all of whom like the book of James in the New Testament, faith without works is dead. Show me your faith without works and I'll show you my faith by my works. Very different approach. And so, conscience isn't a commodity. You can go to East Town Mall, West Town Mall, Orange Imports, and buy boxes of things, corn flakes, kitchen utensils, that sort of thing. You can't buy a box of conscience. It's an abstract thing. And I will leave you to ponder on that subject. More interesting, to a political science major, democracy. Now, what does it mean? Well, democracy, like so many words, varies depending on who's using it, like the words I and me. The military dictatorship and repressive police state, known as East Germany, was considered by the Soviet Union to be democratic. Its very name was the German Democratic Republic. That's not my definition of democracy. I think the simplest definition is democracy is the application of the principle of equality in a political or administrative setting. And America is very proud of how democratic we are, right? One person, one vote. Not so fast. You've probably already heard me talk about the fact that there are about 5.5 million Americans who live in the seven states with the smallest populations, Group A. There are about 60 million people who live in our first and now fourth largest state in terms of population, New York, Florida, past my home state, recently. How dare they? And then Group C are the American citizens who live in the District of Columbia, the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, and the American territories of American Samoa, the U.S. Virgin Islands, Guam, and the one we always forget about the Northern Marianas. I defy anybody here to find them on a globe quickly. Group A, 5.5 million people, represented in the U.S. Senate by 14 senators. Group B, about 11 times as many people, represented by 4 senators. And the last group, equal in size to the first, are not now and never have been represented in the Senate at all. That's not equality. That's not one person, one vote. And if we're in favor of bringing democracy into not just Unitarian Universalism, but society at large, what are we doing about that? It's an open-ended question. Ponder. Now, the term equality can also be applied in an economic setting. In American public life, between 1968, when Norman Thomas died, and a year ago, when Bernie Sanders suddenly became a public figure nationally, very little was said about democracy applied, or the equality applied, in the field of economics. How excited are Americans at large about that concept? And again, the Soviet Union had a very different definition of the term socialist. We differ highly from that of the mayors about 100 years ago in various towns in Wisconsin. Okay, something to consider. Equality in society. In the 1950s, 1960s, it just wasn't done to suggest that America had social classes. I mean, we all knew it. You know, you could study it in a sociology class, but you didn't. You no more talked about that in polite conversation than run around naked on the streets. It just wasn't done. But America has been this layered society. The class structure obviously doesn't look like India 100 years ago. But there are folks, lower class, who subsist, literally live in boxes that Maytag washers and dryers came in. For whatever reason, alcoholism, chronic mental illness, it exists. And you're not, no matter how much money you have, you're not in the upper class unless you're from an old name family. You need not just money and power and social status, you need to have been part of society for a long time. The Roosevelts. Even Andrew Carnegie, who got there, originated as kind of a poor boy in Scotland. Scotland's a theme we'll address again shortly. But let's look at democracy. I mean, democracy is, you know, I'm a Democrat, little d, Democrat, first and foremost, in favor of it. Is it always best? And what do we mean by it? One person, one vote. Fine. But what number of people voting get us to a decision? Simple majority. Might use that here. 60%, for reasons known only to them, that's what you need to get anything passed these days in the U.S. Senate. Go to Robert Rules of Order. Sometimes you need 3/4 or 2/3 majority to do things. And if you're a Hicksite Quaker, you need unanimity. Unanimity. It takes a long time for decisions that are going to be acted on to be reached. One person who is entitled to vote doesn't like it, the decision does not get formally made by the meeting, meaning congregation. So where do you draw the line? It's not clear, it's not obvious, it's not specified. And how useful is democracy in some settings? How do you like to have your country defended by committees? We'll vote on who gets to hold rank in the military today, what our tactics are going to be, whether, you know, we find them useful. I'd argue that the two most successful organizations in the history of Western civilization have been the Roman army, which did a amazing job considering the technology available to it. And the Roman Church, which has survived for about two millennia. Oh, okay. I'll bring out more wire then. Thank you. Sorry. So when we speak in the context of a Unitarian Universalist congregation about democracy, equality, in other words, in operating, and saying that we want more of it in society, it's not necessarily quite that straightforward or off the shelf. And that is a lot to think about. I mean, you might want to take a day off and think about that. And as it happens, Congress has obliged us with a national holiday tomorrow. So this would provide an opportunity for that. I'd like to add that the next to last thing musically related today is going to come up on the screen. And just as I liked the thought of the first hymn written by Sir Arthur Sullivan, you may be familiar with some of his other works, Iolanthe, the Mikado, quite a musician, but he's the same one. It includes a reference in the words that have been set to his tune, "Poets sung its glory." And I can think of no a better illustration, if the former has to do with individual conscience and that tradition, I can think of no better song to illustrate a principle of democracy, not wanting to have to try to translate all of the Ode to Joy. Alle Menschen werden Brüder. Was that decent? Okay, thank you, Rosemary. Then this poem that was written by Robert Burns. A man's a man for I that. Again, mankind, humankind, all of us. For I that basically means in the final analysis. Okay. The spoiler alert, the last verse after having, and part of the reason I'm doing this is because it's written and sung in Scots, which is a strong dialect. We'd be like watching a Shakespearean play and not realizing what's going on as a result. He talks about rank among people as being relatively worthless, that honesty is more important than whether you're rich or poor, that having an independent mind, you'd laugh at people who think otherwise. And the final verse is, then let us pray that come it may, and come it will for all that, that sense and worth or awe the earth shall bear the gree in all that. Bear the gree turns out to mean win the prize, win the day. For all that and all that, it's coming yet for all that, that man to man the world o'er shall brothers be for all that. Well, that's a nice poem. What you will see is a very gifted woman singer singing that song to a group of people who are seated. It is the Scottish Parliament on the day that it opened. To us, Independence Day is a remembrance of something that occurred 2.5 centuries ago. In Scotland in 1999, they were regaining control, not complete control, but major control over their own affairs for the first time in over 290 years. And it's not by accident that on the last verse, the members of the assembly join in the chorus, the words I just read to you. So you need that background. Not everybody is up on their Scottish history. But here, how many of us were alive in 1776? I thought so. I should put money on it. 1999, we were all alive. So this is a real Independence Day, really felt, and maybe we can think in terms of ours in light of theirs. Thank you.
Yeah, but these are very basic issues. They're being felt not just across Europe, but in our own country, as I'm sure you're well aware. One of the few good things to come out of the Brexit vote was sent to me by a friend of mine in Sydney, Australia. It's an Australian flag. We call it the upper left-hand corner of the flag. There's the Union Jack. And so it's an Australian flag. Just below the Union Jack is an upward arrow. And the words, "We're with stupid." It's just rough. Well, yeah, these are real issues. It's not just an abstraction. It's not just, as I say, the 4th of July elevation language. I was thinking in preparing for all this, areas other than the military defense setting, in which equality and by extension democracy doesn't work. Learning music. The student better assume that the music teacher knows more and is better at it than the student, where very little learning is going to take place. And I think this extends to teaching in general. Like, we have different gifts, we have different access to different knowledge. And yes, there are many elections that any of us would not be very happy with the results of. The danger arises when we no longer respect scholarship or facts. And that sometimes enters into play. Most people I know are deathly afraid of numbers. And they'll believe whatever they're told. Sounds good. Somebody starts quoting figures and it sounds authoritative to you. I had the misfortune of taking enough accounting and finance to be able to spot this stuff. There's a wonderful book called How to Lie with Statistics. That should be required reading for anybody who knows on the book. Period. But yeah, my point is, it's not black and white. Without getting into names, the debate within the Democratic primary process is influenced by a concept which I think occurs less, as less of a challenge in the context of an old Scottish proverb, "Who pays the piper calls the tune."
Exactly.
That's a fact. I should quote Winston Churchill, "Democracy is the worst form of government possible, except for all the others that we're trying." Winning is always good for you.
I point out that a critical variable in respect for others is, who's others? When did women get the right to vote in this country? When did former slaves get the right to vote? This wasn't written in 1783, 1787, it evolved over time. Equality, respect for others, yeah, very important. But I don't necessarily, I'm more of a statist than not, I'd rather have my life dictated somewhat by the federal government than by Monsanto. That's me. Okay, just saying. The discussions that I've had, I'm discussing, the other person is yelling, with libertarians have tended to break down along those lines. I think the point, it is possible to have respect for others in a context of, in a non-democratic context. That's true. I'd argue that a well-run abbey, the abbot would try to see that all the monks were treated equally, even though, in theory, the abbot was, you know, iron rule in charge. There are such contexts. The problem, I certainly have no problem with what you said. And yes, sometimes liberty and equality are competing grounds, and The thought behind the fifth principle would be each person has to decide how he or she fits in that dynamic. But there's a bigger problem, which some people are not interested in a just society. Mm-hmm. They are interested in a just me society. Mm-hmm. A few of them have been on the front pages recently. Part of the problem there is, here is Mitch McConnell, ranking Republican senator, and here is Elizabeth Warren, junior senator from Massachusetts. One of them thinks that health care is a right and the other doesn't. So the problem has started by defining what is a right and what is not. People seem to think that if the law says you have a right to something, then it's morally yours, and that's not always the case. If you've got more food than you need and people around you are starving, legally, you've got more food than you need. End of discussion. But is it the end of, or should it be the end of the discussion? That's a different question. But, yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Go in peace.